This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. An MIT econ professor and MacArthur Genius Grant winner thinks she knows what fixes healthcare in America. Amy Finkelstein is co-author of a new book, We've Got You Covered. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start with a pre-pandemic statistic that you've highlighted in the book, one of many, many. Of the $140 billion in unpaid medical bills in America held by collection agencies, three-fifths was incurred by households with health insurance. What did that say to you when you stumbled across that?
It says that the problem of health insurance in America is not just the problem of the uninsured, that the people who have insurance don't have good insurance. Because the point of health insurance is it's an economic product. It's not about your health. It's terribly labeled. It's about protecting you economically, financially, in the case of poor health. Even when you have insurance, you can rack up thousands of dollars in medical debt. It's not doing what it's supposed to.
Gee whiz, we ended up with this healthcare system with these flaws after such exquisite planning and careful identification of the objectives of America's healthcare system, he said ironically.
Yeah, the American healthcare system was never deliberately designed or constructed. It's been put together piecemeal, patchwork, as particular issues arose or particular political opportunities presented themselves. And that's part of the problem, because whenever you have patches, you're going to have gaps at the seams. People who think they have coverage, but then lose it because they lose their job, or they get older, or they get healthier. Some health insurance is only there while you're sick, and then you get a little healthier and it goes away, or they get a little higher income. That's crazy. The purpose of health insurance is to provide security. And when coverage itself is highly insecure and uncertain, something is wrong.
So what to do is the overall question here, but seeking answers, you looked at what other countries do?
We started actually from just first principles of what's the problem we're trying to solve and what's the solution to that problem. But we were struck and a bit humbled when we did that sort of abstract exercise to realize that at the end of the day, we ended up where every other high-income country is. It turns out the answer is really simple. What every other high-income country does is have universal basic coverage with the ability to buy additional supplemental coverage for people who can afford and want more than that basic coverage. And that's what we need to do.
So, I mean, you're talking about like Medicare for all, but like even more so.
So no, Medicare for all is a vacuous slogan that means different things to different people. We're like Medicare for all in the sense of health insurance for all, but two differences, I'd say. One is Medicare is actually a pretty crummy insurance product. It leaves people exposed to unlimited out-of-pocket medical expenses. We'd get rid of that. We'd have patients paying nothing precisely because the point of insurance is to protect you economically. It's crazy the way Medicare is designed with unlimited out-of-pocket medical expenses. On the other hand, we'd be a lot more basic than the current Medicare program. The current Medicare program, one of the reasons costs are so out of control in it is that it puts no guardrails on what patients or physicians can do. They can order any test they want, any procedure, go to any doctor they want at any time. Our policy would be much more basic. There'd probably be longer waiting times, a little less choice of, you know, which doctor, prior authorization for some procedures, and a lot more basic on the non-medical amenities in terms of, you know, how many people to a room in a hospital and that sort of thing. Again, this is what a lot of other countries like Australia, Singapore, et cetera, do. So it would be both in many ways better than the current Medicare program, but in some important ways worse. And that's where the supplemental coverage would come in for those who can afford it.
By the way, you mentioned we wouldn't pay anything for a service. You know, I talk to all these healthcare experts. They're always going on about the importance of copays so we don't overburden the medical system with our trivial ailments.
As economists, you know, one of the central tenets of economics that we've ourselves taught and lectured students on for a generation, and before that, before us, others have for many generations, is that patients should pay something for their medical care. Otherwise, they'll go to the doctor every time they sniffle. They'll want a CT scan every time they have a headache. And the way to make patients make sensible decisions about their medical care is to give them so-called skin in the game, we take it back. We've made that argument ourselves in our own research and writing, and we take it back, not because the facts are wrong. We stand by the facts that we and generations of economists have produced, that it is true that when patients don't have to pay anything for their medical care, they use a lot more medical care. The reason we take it back is based on practical reality. When we look at all the other high-income countries, which of course all have universal coverage already and have followed the advice of generations of economists and introduced or increased those patient payments into their basic coverage plans, they've simultaneously introduced and layered on lots of exceptions so that, you know, people don't have to pay those copays if they're sufficiently poor or sufficiently old or sufficiently young or sufficiently sick. And the list goes on and on. So at the end of the day, you know, they create so many exceptions that almost no one pays those copays. So the squeeze is just not worth the juice. And the reason they have to create those exceptions is because there always will be people who can't afford $5 for prescription drugs or $20 for a doctor visit. And there's good evidence on that point. So they end up creating all these kinds of patches and exceptions to deal with that problem. And that puts them right back in the mess that we're trying to get out of, namely an overly complicated, too clever by half Rube Goldberg machine that punches far below its weight.
I see you've run this through some spreadsheets. How does it come out? I mean, can the country afford the system that you and your co-author envision?
I mean, how can we afford not to would be my answer. Yes, we can afford it. And the reason is very simple. We're already paying as taxpayers for universal coverage. We are just not getting it. So it's true that the U.S. has a much greater role for the private sector in healthcare than in other countries. But as I'm sure listeners know, we spend twice as much as other countries on healthcare as a share of the economy. Only half of that is taxpayer funded, whereas in other countries, almost all of it is taxpayer funded. So if you can follow the math, half of twice as much is the same amount. In other words, the taxpayer portion of our healthcare spending is already as large as the public financing in other countries that's paying for universal coverage. So we might choose, if and when our plan gets implemented, to raise taxes if we want to make the basic plan more generous, but we can afford basic universal automatic coverage without raising taxes.
What do you think about outcomes? You think we would be healthier?
I think asking about health is the wrong question, actually. That health insurance as a term is a misnomer. Health insurance isn't actually about our health. It's about economic protection. So, and one way to see that is if you look at the huge and hugely disturbing disparities in health outcomes in the United States, you know, across income groups, you know, the rich are much healthier than the poor, or across race, white Americans have much better health outcomes than Black Americans. There's a compelling body of evidence that suggests that very little of that has to do with access to medical care, let alone health insurance, which provides that access. Instead, it's about the differences in the air we breathe, the food we eat, the cigarettes we do or do not smoke. In other words, as crazy as it may sound, for people who are interested in radically improving population health and reducing these disturbing disparities, health insurance policy is not the policy lever to lean on. One really striking way to drive this home is research that other economists have done that show that even in countries like Norway and Sweden, which have not only universal health insurance, but cradle-to-grave social safety net, the health disparities across the income group are as large as in the U.S.
Wow. So if this whole discussion of how do we rethink health care economics in America is not necessarily about health, what is it about? About not bankrupting families?
Yes, it's about economic security. The purpose of health insurance is the same as the purpose of any insurance. Take flood insurance. We don't buy flood insurance so that our houses won't flood. We have it so that in the unfortunate event that they do, we don't have to go homeless or forgo food and other necessities in order to repair our home. That's the purpose of health insurance as well. Economic security when we unfortunately have poor health, that we don't have to also face economic ruin or be unable to get the essential care we need. Health insurance is an economic product, not a health product.
Should we compare what you're proposing to the idea of we have public schools for education in America. We don't charge copays. The assumption is it's there if people want it.
Yeah, I think, you know, health and education are often discussed in the same breath because they are very similar in terms of we've decided as a society, we have a fundamental commitment to provide some basic essential level of service on each of those. And yes, I think the public school model is a sensible one. One place where we would diverge from that is that currently, if you choose to supplement public school with, say, private school, the parent has to go pay for the entire private school education. They don't sort of get to take the taxes they paid towards their student's public education and use it to help pay for the private education. That's also how the UK does its supplemental health insurance. If you're in the UK and you want a cataract operation or need a cataract operation, but you want a special lens, the National Health Service in Britain will pay for a basic lens. If you want that special lens, you not only have to go to the private sector, but you have to pay for the surgeon and the entire cost of the special lens, as opposed to just the additional cost of putting in that slightly more expensive lens. That's not how we think health insurance should be designed. We would do it the way that they do it in, say, Singapore, where you just pay for this incremental or supplemental cost of the additional care you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see the analogy with public education in the book, because you can get a fabulous education at public schools in America, but you can also get an awful education.
I mean, that's a failure of implementation, not of concept. It's important that a universal basic coverage system be funded adequately. And if it's not, that we take steps to make sure it is. We give the example in the book of other countries that were committed to universal basic coverage with the ability to supplement, Israel, for example, and then started to find unacceptably long wait times in the basic program and difficulties getting access to high quality doctors. And, you know, this is not a sexy answer, but it's the truth. You know, you need to be vigilant. What they did is they had a commission that studied it, and they realized they needed to increase the funding of the basic program. They'd had a large number of immigrants who were driving up costs, and they needed to put regulations in place to make sure that physicians had both incentives and requirements to make sure that they practiced in the basic system as well as the supplemental system. So yes, anything can be done badly. It can also be done well.
MIT economics professor Amy Finkelstein, along with Laurent Inav, their new book is called We've Got You Covered, Rebooting American Healthcare. Professor, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me, David.